Skilling is here.
Hey, Tom.
Yes, sir. Hi, Anna. Hi, Ro.
Now, if we get, again, I'm going to ask you now, if we're able to get this new planet named, the ninth planet, you want a moon? You in for a moon?
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure, I'll take a moon, I'll take an asteroid, you know, whatever.
Yeah, all right.
As long as it's up there, it's fair game. Count me in.
Tom deserves one, actually. I don't think any of us do. We're just sort of playing, but Tom really does reserve. We have a texter, Rona. Then you could call the people who live there Aronians.
The Aronians. That would be like Aronius. That would be that should be the name that they should name it, the Aronius. Because quite honestly, now, I just, you know what, every once in a while, you'll talk to somebody. You know, we'll have, obviously, you get your politicians to come on talk shows. You got celebrities of all ilks. But generally, it's somebody who really peaked in about 1978, if they're a celebrity, that find their way onto these kinds of shows. But today, we did talk to this guy, this Michael Brown. He's the guy that found this.
Isn't that amazing?
This planet. He's the guy who also decertified Pluto as a planet.
But haven't they kind of recertified it again?
No, still it's a dwarf planet.
Oh,
doesn't count. It's not a planet, not full.
That's a shame, because I always liked Pluto.
Me too.
Everyone did.
Me too.
And then how about this? He is best known. That's not what he's best known for.
No, it's not? For killing Pluto?
No. He is, well, I mean, he really is, astronomical.
Yeah.
In astronomical circles, he is best known for his discovery of Eris, the most massive object found in the solar system in 150 years.
That's amazing. That's quite an accomplishment.
How about that?
Yeah.
Wow.
How far away is that?
I have no idea.
No follow-up questions, please.
Yeah. Well, Roe launches into these discussions about bacteria and viruses and all. I figured he would probably know something about astronomy, too.
I'm a fan of it. I love the idea of it.
Me too.
I'm in a space movie kick, too, right now.
You said you saw The Martian.
Watch The Martian again. I saw it originally when it came out. Because that's one of those things where Richard Roper will say to me, he will sometimes just put his arm around me and go, you got to go see this in the theater, even though he knows I rarely go, because there's certain movies you got to see, and that was certainly one of them.
It was.
Yeah.
You know what would have been fun? They had a seminar at the University of Chicago with scientists there that was the topic, that movie and how realistic what it depicted was. And, they seemed somewhat satisfied with some of it, although they said the Martian atmosphere was so thin that the depicted windstorm where he got separated from the crew wouldn't have happened because the low density of the air wouldn't have created the kind of damage and disturbance that the movie depicted.
Right.
So that was their one big criticism, or one of the big criticisms. But other than that, they said the idea of growing potatoes and all, as he did in that movie, and establishing contact, that was kind of interesting. I guess there was some truth to that.
Maybe there is. I don't know. It's an interesting. It was fascinating. But
it was
all things space. I just recently rewatched Apollo 13.
Yeah, that's amazing, isn't
great
it?
Great movie.
It is, and to know that that is 100% true.
Yeah.
You know, is just. I mean, they took a few narrative twists with it. Just in the interests of consolidating characters and characterizations and things like that, that's right there, and the right stuff I've always loved. It's a little it shows its age when you watch it again,
right?
Because it's got that 80s kind of
look to it, sure.
Yes, feel to it, even though it takes place in the 60s, it's very caught in the 80s. But and then, of course, the greatest space movie of all time is Top Gun. So there you go.
Right.
There you have it.
Well, it's funny you bring that up, Ro, because when I was on vacation, I watched Neil Armstrong, a PBS Neil Armstrong program again. And, he was amazing. It was interesting. He must not have provided a lot of interviews and all, because they used a lot of audio tape of him describing what had gone on. But, it occurred to me that, isn't it odd that NASA didn't send along? He had a brilliant scientific mind, an engineering mind, an aeronautical mind.
Right.
But wouldn't it have been great to send along a poet or somebody like that who has a really unique command of the English language, and could write about the beauty of what they saw up there? And You know, somehow.
Hey, that poet's not going to do you any good when you blow out the side of your space capsule. That's why the poet's going to write all about how scary he is. I could do that.
I know.
Yeah, that's the.
But imagine how they would have described what they saw up there, or might have described it. It would have been really something. Mm-hmm. But you're right. I mean, from a practical standpoint, they couldn't afford to send somebody like that up.
They tried to do that in space, you know, to space station, things like that. Using the shuttle STS program when they had it here. What is interesting, though, is to me, you know, you hit on something that is fascinating, is how quickly we as a culture, and this is not a new phenomenon, this has been going on for a long time. This is, you know, in the media age of the 20th century, there are, even from the first half of the 20th century prior to television and even in the times when radio was, was in its infancy, mm-hmm. you'd get these, people would be, the American public would be fascinated by these stories. Mm-hmm. And the Apollo system was, the Apollo program was one of those things they were fascinated by. But once Neil Armstrong landed on the moon, right, and stepped out on the moon, it was, and when they got back safely.
And so let's move on.
They didn't give a crap about anything else that happened after that.
It's a shame because, all the technologies that spun out of that are just amazing. Every electronic device we walk around with, it was miniature. You know, as the product of the miniaturization, they had to go on to fit everything in these little cockpit, these little rocket modules.
And the computer that landed, like your cell phone,
Isn't that something? Is
infinitely more powerful. It's like 10 or it's like 120 times more powerful than all of the computer technology that they had that got that thing up there.
Well, do you know the first digital computer they built at Princeton University back in the 40s? They said that its total memory was the equivalent of the memory that's used, or the space that's used on the computer today, to put the cursor on the screen. That was in this. And this thing covered, was made of vacuum tubes and covered a square block and all. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah. Well, it's just a fascinating thing. It's a fascinating endeavor. And then when you've got guys like this.
Did he talk about, they used perturbations in the orbits of other planets, right, to infer the fact that it's there even though they haven't seen it yet.
Right. That's exactly right.
Disturbances, essentially, it's disturbances in this path.
Can you believe, how do they figure that out? I mean, that is pretty amazing stuff.
They literally just take pictures of the sky every single night to look at lights that change in the ways that tell them that there are things moving.
Yeah.
Right. And it's 10, and this, the orbit of this is, if it exists, and the guy's going out on a limb by claiming it's there,
but he's
certain.
Sure.
He's as certain as he can be.
Yeah.
That it's 10,000 years for an orbit.
Jeez.
A year, a calendar year on Roana, with Sepelsa and Skilling as its moon,
I see. Yeah,
I'm just going to keep saying it until somebody adopts it.
Yeah,
yeah.
A year is 10,000.
That's amazing.
Earth years.
Wow.
And so you think that this thing in the sky, and this is going to be the problem finding it. You know, he's asking for civilian astronomy help here, which by the way is how they find things heading toward us.
That's right.
Right. You got all these people are totally into
asteroids
this.
And stuff like that. Yeah.
It's like
the amateur plays quite a role in the world of astronomy. It's a big universe out there to monitor.
When they find the big asteroid heading toward us, it'll be some guy in Papua New Guinea, who's a complete unprofessional. Yeah,
sure.
I got it. Anyway, so the thing is that it's moving so slow. I have no idea how astronomers, because think about that, 10,000 years, one orbit in 10,000 years, they have to figure out where in the sky it might be in relation to the Earth, right?
That's amazing.
It is.
Well, did he give you any idea how far out there they think it is?
20 to 80 billion miles, depending on its place in the elliptical orbit.
Amazing.
And they don't. And I said, where is it now? They go, I don't know. That's what you're here to figure out.
Well, it is stunning news. No question about it.
All right, let's talk about that big storm that's heading to the East Coast. Is that going to clip us?
Well, you know what it'll do? Its wind circulation will be so mammoth. This thing's a real atmospheric behemoth. This thing's going to cover some real estate. this thing will explode as it moves up the East Coast once it takes a big gulp of that Gulf Stream energy.
It's heading down into that tomorrow, like over New Orleans tomorrow.
Exactly. It goes down to Texas, tracks along the Gulf Coast, then turns across Georgia and heads out off the Carolinas, at which point it turns north-northeast, parallels the coast, and begins bombing out, as we see in meteorology, really exploding. And its wind circulation will reach back to Chicago, so its impact on us will be its far northwest side circulation will blow down the length of the lake into Chicago Friday, and that's the basis for our prediction of some possible lake effect snow showers. And it might be a flurry tomorrow night in spots that starts coming off the lake, but the winds will pick up then. But this thing has the potential, the biggest snowstorm officially on record in Washington is 28 inches over a three-day period. Although at Dulles, they had a measurement of a 33-inch three-day storm. Mm-hmm. So those are the benchmark numbers, and we have a couple of computer models that are kicking out that amount of snow. And some are a consensus of the models that puts about 40 inches down in the mountains of western Virginia and eastern West Virginia. So there's going to be some real serious snow out there. Then on top of that, there'll be 60-mile-an-hour wind gusts coming in along the coast. They have high astronomical tides. So you're going to have
erosion and flooding and
So they're going to get the whole shebang, and it appears it'll be the corridor from Washington through Baltimore, Philly, and New York, and maybe extreme southern New England. Boston looks like it's going to only be skirted by this thing. So
can't hit Tom Brady, huh?
No.
Don't mess with Tom Brady.
Well, they're going to be in Denver anyway.
They need him
now. Hey,
we all need
him. Now, what's interesting is that. You mentioned that astronomical high tide. That's like the Superstorm Sandy setup, right?
Yep.
That's bad.
Yeah, it really did. It couldn't happen at a least, a more inopportune time than this because the tides are, it's really interesting. They have quite an effect. I remember as a kid, I grew up out in New Jersey in my earliest years, and we'd go to the ocean, and whenever you had a full moon, you'd get those astronomical high tides, and it was amazing how far up the water came. It was noticeably higher than it normally is.
Yeah.
So you put, 20-foot seas on top of that and bring 60-mile-an-hour winds in, and you're going to get some serious coastal flooding. You'll probably get a mix of precip right on the coast, too, but you won't have to go very far inland where it'll go over to totally snow.
All right. Tom Skilling, thank you,
thank
sir.
You, Tom.
Guys, good to talk to you. We'll be talking more about this thing.
He had a moon named after him today. That's how good Tom Skilling is.
He
had a moon.
He deserves it.
He had a moon for Roanna named after him.
Well, I think it was very generous of you guys giving Mark and me a moon.
I thought so, too. That's exactly
so thank you. And it's not every afternoon drive time host that would do that for you.
Not everybody's as giving.
Host and hostess, yes. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So, guys, thank you.
You're welcome.
For sharing.
Thank you, Tom.
All right, Anna. Good to talk to you guys.
My God, what a mess. All right.